Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, and I brought that very special person with me today. You're not going to answer, huh, Richard?
Oh, me. Oh.
I thought you were going to hang me out to dry tonight.
No, I wouldn't hang you out to dry.
That's good. Well, this is that.
Good evening, everyone.
This is that special time of the week when we get a chance to touch one another, to communicate. And tonight, if you're getting our email, then you know we've brought along a very special gentleman from India by the name of Gandhi. And just to tell you how we choose these individuals, those on our mailing list have been very kind to send us names of people that they would like for us to communicate with on the other side. And this was a gentleman, when I was going through the names, I felt his presence. There was something about him that he wanted to come forth and talk about, well, you might say conditions in India, conditions today. And this gentleman had accomplished a tremendous amount through nonviolence. It was a time of great warring factions. India was under British rule at the time, and like so many people who were under someone else's rule, they wanted freedom. And Mr. Gandhi worked wonders through nonviolence. And when he put his hand up and said he wanted to be here, I thought, you know, he has a message to tell us that I think would be very important in this day and age. It seems like the same problems repeat themselves in different parts of the world. And even if it isn't a problem where you're under the home rule of someone else, this ability to be able to face conflict in a peaceful way and bring about what you're trying to accomplish is extremely valuable, I think. And so, Richard, if you'd be kind enough to call in Mr. Gandhi, I know he's here because he's been communicating with me, call him forth, and when you do, give me and our audience a sense of what his vibration feels like today. So as Richard is doing this, if you have a picture of Mr. Gandhi, put it into your third eye. So as he brings forth his voice and Richard connects with his energy, you might be able to feel it also. And in that movie Gandhi, I think it was produced in 1957, there's some good information and good pictures of Mr. Gandhi. So, Richard, if you'd be kind enough to start our program.
Yes, and he has been making his presence felt even before the call. He is very keen to be here. That's very clear. He has quite a strong masculine energy, quite a powerful energy, and there is a great what I might call clarity to it. It's very clear, clean energy, strong, directed. No sense of kind of scattering, if you will, but this sense of power from him. And it is a beautiful energy, very, very powerful, quite consistent, I would say, with the way he lived in the world. So very interesting energy, not an energy that I've experienced from anyone else before.
Thank you, Richard. And usually when we start these programs, I'm chuckling because he's really anxious to bring his message forth. And that's what I was going to say is when we communicate with people on these shows, they usually come, you might say, with a table of contents, items that they wish to talk about. And he's very keen on giving a message. So, Richard, if you'd be kind enough to receive his message I would appreciate it.
Let's see what he has to say. And he is here, and he is saying, there are many parallels between the time in which I lived and the time that you now find yourselves in. In my time, as you know, India was under the rule of the British. And as Carolyn mentioned, so many Indians wished to be out from under the British yoke, you might say. And so many were wishing to pursue the path of violence, to declare war against the British. And it seemed very clear to me that that would be a doomed path, because it was a time when Britain still held a great deal of power. And so it was that I chose my path, a path of non-violence, a path of peace. Not just peace, but a path of pacifism. And it seems to me that most people have not exactly understood the key to what I did. I know one of the things that the two of you teach is that ultimately the only thing that you have power over is yourself. And if you examine what I did, the only thing that I exercised any power over was myself. There was a time when I chose to not eat food for a period of time because I wanted to demonstrate that in withdrawing that, you might say, choice to live and be willing to make that choice, it indeed can be a very powerful statement if the context for it is well established. And there were many other situations where, as I say, the only power that I truly exercised was power over myself. And as I walked my path, more and more people connected with what I stood for and came out in their own way in support of what I was doing. And so you see, this is a very powerful lesson. In a sense, I demonstrated that truth. That indeed the trappings of the world, or indeed attempts to exercise power over others, is a path that ultimately is going to lead to failure. Because truly, the only power that you have is over yourself and your circumstances. And it truly is in recognizing this and exercising that power that you can make great change, because very few truly are willing to demonstrate that power in the right context. And I mentioned that I see parallels between my time and your time, because you are living in a time when, as you know, there is a great transition that awaits you in consciousness. However, as part of the path towards achieving that, there is a need to disempower those who currently exercise a great deal of control over humanity in many, many ways, not just financial, but indeed on many levels. The same key individuals sit behind the influence of religion in so many countries. They influence the schooling system, the nature of the media, the nature of the film and television industry, so many aspects of modern music. It is not understood how deeply these individuals influence your consciousness, your you might say the circumstances in which you all live. There are so many threads to this. They control your politicians. And you are not going to defeat these individuals by trying to confront them head on. Quite the opposite. The only way to deal with this is, in a sense, to withdraw your power from them, to make your own choices, to begin to stand for what you understand to be true in your own way, not to seek to dominate others through that process, but indeed stand in the truth that you represent, that you understand. And yes, there are great spiritual forces that work to support these shifts. And so it is not so much about confronting these individuals with the stand, but really claiming your own power, healing yourselves in this life, reconnecting with your love for yourself, and understanding and claiming that truly the only individual's view of you that matters in terms of what you do and how you behave in the world is your own. No one else's view matters. And as more and more of you understand this truth and stand in the truth of who and what you are, this will have a powerful impact on this balance of power in your world. You do not see or understand the level of impact that this has. But it is much greater than you realize. And the more of you that begin to do this, you in so many ways are treading the same path that I trod. Yes, my path was very often much more public than yours is likely to be, but there was just one of me. And there can be many thousands of you, indeed tens of thousands of you, as this process develops. And so this, above all else, is my message to you, to claim your power back, to recognize that truly you do have power over yourself, and it is the only thing that you truly have power over. And when you begin to exercise it, then the impact of this is far, far greater than you can ever imagine. And so I encourage all of you to investigate my example and the film that Carolyn mentioned, which was made in the very early 60s, is a very good illustration of what my life was like, how I lived and how I chose to present myself in the world. And I encourage you to watch that movie to gain a sense of how I stood in the world. Mr. Kingsley does a great job of representing me in that film. And I was honored that he took such great care in the way that he represented me in that film. And so I encourage you to understand my example, because it can be very powerful in your time, albeit in a different manner than the way I chose that public role to transform the experience of the Indian people. And so this is my core message for you tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Gandhi. Before we get back with other questions, I would just like to invite our listening audience at this moment. If they have any questions for Mr. Gandhi, please give us a call. And something that occurred to me as you were speaking, you know that Richard and I agree wholeheartedly with the words that you have used, because it's the things that we work with about having control over yourself, loving yourself. So many statements that you made is things that we teach. I would like to ask you, if you could, to further define how individuals can use their personal power. There's many things today that we don't agree with, but we're not necessarily, people might not necessarily be a public figure, and you had moved to the point where you had become a public figure, and you had many followers. individuals might not have a follower, and yes, I certainly agree with you, you have power over yourself, but give us an example, if you would, as how you might implement that in today's society. Can you do that for us?
As I said earlier, I recognize that your situations, for the most part, are quite different from mine in the sense that you will be acting in a private manner. And indeed, you should anticipate that no one will follow where you might choose to walk. And it is, in a sense, irrelevant whether people follow you or not. It is about exercising leadership of your own life, whatever that might mean to you. It is important, above all else, to begin to recognize that you have that power and to begin to exercise it in the way that you live your life. That is not about necessarily confronting anyone. It is about choosing how you spend your time, how and who you interact with. In other words, your relationships with others, how you relate to other people on every level, to relate to them in a considered manner, with honesty and integrity. And it is also about choosing how you might say, spend your money, how you engage the world. It is about, in a sense, choosing food products which represent quality food for your body. It is about, where these possibilities exist, choosing how you use your labor, how you apply yourself in the world in a manner which generates an income. It might seem difficult to many of you where you are employed by someone and you feel you don't have any alternatives. But I tell you, everyone has alternatives. You can think you do not, but truly you do. And indeed, sometimes it is necessary to simply step away from what you are doing to open up the doors to other possibilities. Trust me, they always exist. And especially as the consciousness begins to shift upon your planet. Because other opportunities, other mechanisms for bringing the wherewithal into your life that you need to live will begin to change. And so there are many threads to this. It is not about confronting anybody or indeed expecting anyone to follow your example or to support your choices. This is a very private manner in which I speak. It is about as many of humanity as possible beginning to reclaim their individual power, reclaim their sovereignty. This is what I am raising with you, not about generating a public profile, in a sense, in any way to seek to emulate what I undertook. It is not about that. This is a different notion that I am sharing with you. It is based on the same principle, however, its implementation is very different because as events unfold, the more people that take this stance, choose to live a life of integrity on every level and to exercise power and control over your own lives. This, my friends, will have transformational effects that at this moment you do not understand. And so it is this leading of your own life, a life which could be very private. That is my focus in my words to you tonight.
I thank you for clarifying all of that. And yes, I understand exactly what you're saying. Living a life of integrity, the way you spend your money, the way you eat, who you decide to interact with, I understand all of that, and it's a beautiful message that you bring for us. If it's possible, can we discuss a little bit the energy, because everything here on this planet is energy. When someone is living a life of integrity, living the kind of life that you are discussing, what kind of energy is released, and how does that affect other people who might not be living that life of integrity? Can you share something with us along those lines?
The fundamental energy that is involved with this stance is love. It is, in essence, love of self, but also love of your Creator and the understanding of that relationship, that indeed you live in service in a manner to your Creator, and yet you also live a life of freedom of choice, a life where you may choose your own path. And so fundamentally it is based in love, and it is only when you have acknowledged your love for yourself can you truly begin to walk a path of this nature. And yes, there are other energies that are connected to this. The energies of compassion, which are also an aspect of love, as you would recognize, are energies which, the more you walk this path, begin to open up. Because when you have exercised this power over yourself, you begin to observe other people in a different manner. And you begin to act in a manner which supports them in stepping into their sovereignty. And this is a stance of compassion. And so, above all else, it is this powerful aspect of love that begins to flow forth into the world.
That's beautiful. And I thank you for those words. I believe you spoke earlier about change that is coming to this planet. Where you are today, Mr. Gandhi, are you able to observe some of the possibilities or probabilities that might be the outcome of this change that we're talking about?
I am able to witness these. It is interesting that you raise the subject of possibilities and probabilities, because as you understand, the nature of the future as it is observed from the now, which is where I now reside, it is essentially made up of possibilities and probabilities. That is, events need to be of high probability before they are likely to move into the experience of an individual or a community. However, it is also important to recognize the role of cycles. Creation contains many cycles, and those cycles have fixed boundaries. Fixed boundaries could be in the form of space, but in particular, they involve what you call time. And so, when one speaks of possibilities and probabilities, in a sense, they do not really apply to that transition which awaits you in your near future, beginning at the end of 2012 and, you might say, completing in early 2013. This is not something which exists in possibility or probability, because it is a defined and fixed boundary, defined and fixed by the Creator. And some of you might say, where is our free will? What choice do we have? And I would say to you that free will is bounded by these cycles. You have free will to act in a particular manner within a cycle. But when you reach the cycle boundary, you are faced with choice of some sort, inevitably. And the bottom line of this choice is to acknowledge your Creator or otherwise. in acknowledging your Creator, all that is necessary will in some manner come into place to enable you to participate in the ascension process. Choosing other will see you cross over either before the time of that December 2012 solstice or during it. And so it is a boundary. It is the end of this cycle. And there are many other cycles which are connected to that particular cycle. The end of the cycle of the dark, for example, and there are many others. And so this particular time that you are approaching is not really one of possibility and probability, because it is a cycle boundary. And so it is not something that you can ignore, you might say. Yes, there is a free will choice about whether you acknowledge your Creator or whether you do not, but the outcome of that choice is reasonably fixed, you might say. And so I see that unfolding in your future as an aspect of that cycle boundary which is so powerful. There are so many elements in that boundary, it is hard to imagine as you approach it from within that veiled consciousness that you exist in upon planet Earth. And so I see very clearly this boundary rather than, as you termed it, possibility and probability as you approach this time.
I thank you for bringing up this topic, because it's one that's near and dear to my heart and Richard's also. And if you see this boundary, as you say that you do, and I believe that you do, can you give us some thoughts as to what might be on the other side of that boundary for those who choose to follow it?
It is, as has been shared with you by a number of others, and that is this transition to a higher level of consciousness and a transition to what has been called the new earth with your physical bodies, so that you will move to this new expression of the planet Earth in its pristine condition. All of the pollution will be cleared, including such things as radioactivity and so on. All of this will be absent from the new earth. And you will come to this new earth in your perfected, rejuvenated physical bodies. And you will very quickly reawaken to your skills and abilities that you have, you might say, shorn from you as you have come into that consciousness. These will return. And so there will be great wonder, great amazement for so many of humanity who have chosen this path but have not really been in a place to build detailed skills, knowledge, and understanding about what is unfolding. And so I see great wonder and great joy as this amazing experience awaits those of humanity who make this choice.
That's beautiful, Mr. Gandhi. As we say, this is a topic that's near and dear to our hearts. And if I understood you correctly, I think you said that once we cross over that boundary, that we're going to start remembering the skills that we have developed in other lifetimes that we have forgotten about when we came to Earth recently? Is that what, I think that's what you said. I wanted to clarify that.
That is so. Indeed, some of these skills and abilities will begin to awaken with the reawakening of the DNA as is planned at the end of 2012. Some of your ability to communicate with other forms of consciousness and to begin to manifest from the formless, these skills and abilities will begin to awaken from that moment. And so there will be some period where at least some people will begin to activate some of these skills before the ascension process. And so it is a, you might say it is a phased process, that it will begin before the ascension event and will continue rapidly thereafter.
I applaud your answers and I thank you for them. And apparently, you say that you are in the now and you see these boundaries and you see these events. Can you give us some, these questions that I'm asking is really for our listeners. Can you give our listeners some thoughts as to how they might move into the now so they can see some of these boundaries? Is there some information that you can share with our listeners with regards to this?
All of humanity has far greater ability in that current consciousness to connect with the experience of now than they realize. Humanity, for the most part, has been persuaded that these kinds of abilities are properties of the devil. And so they have shut down any ability that they may have had in this regard and indeed have felt strongly discouraged. And not only that, have doubted the ability of others to communicate with beings on the other side, as Richard is doing right now with me. However, it is important to recognize that the energy bodies which surround the physical body, the emotional, the mental, and the spiritual bodies, are all in the now. Even though they surround the physical body in that dimension, they are, in a sense, outside of what you might call time and space. It is hard to comprehend this notion, how they might surround the physical body as they do and yet also be outside of time and space, as you perceive it. And so there are aspects of you which today are in what you call the now. And indeed, as you connect with your higher self, which also is in the now, and you connect with beings on the other side, all of these are in the now. And indeed, in working with your higher self, you can access the now. It can undertake this on your behalf, in a sense. And you can also, as you awaken the Kundalini energy, begin to send aspects of yourself forth anywhere into the cosmos. And so there are many threads by which you can begin to access what you call the now.
Thank you for that information. These are things that Richard and I certainly believe in and we work with. You mentioned raising Kundalini, and there are many of our listeners who would like to hear some thoughts from you as to how they might raise Kundalini. Can you, and I would think that in India this was a practice that was taught, I'm imagining. Can you give our listeners some thoughts as to how they might work to raise their own Kundalini?
It is something which was widely taught within the yoga traditions and indeed continues to be. However, for the average Indian, this is not something which is taught. However, there is the understanding of these energies within the majority of Indians. And there are many mechanisms by which you can awaken this. And rather than suggest a particular process, I encourage your listeners to investigate this on the internet and to find a process, if they choose, that resonates with them, because there will be many suggested cards. A simple process that you might follow is simply to work in meditation and to recognize that this energy resides in the base chakra. And with intention, connect with that energy and seek to move that energy up to the second chakra. And just focus on this. And day by day by day, seek to move these energies up to the next higher chakra, moving up one chakra at a time. And so, for example, on day two, you might move the energy with your intention from the base chakra to the second chakra, and then to the, or sacral chakra, and then to the third chakra, or what you might call the solar plexus, and then move that energy back down. And so by doing this with some focus, you'll begin to feel this energy and begin to move it as you focus. For many people, this requires some work because they have not activated in this lifetime and because their body needs some particular focus and attention, because it is likely that they have not done this for many lifetimes. And so it is like a crust has formed over this process that needs to be broken. So I have given you, even though I said I was not going to, a process by which you can do this. It is really as simple as I described. And as you work with this energy, you will come to understand how you can move it in your body in this way and work it up to the crown chakra and beyond.
I thank you for explaining that, and I think that would be of great value to our listeners. Something that Richard and I work with people, and that's discernment. It seems to me that in today's world, discernment is very important, because people come forth with, you might say, news or information that is, first of all, wrong, could be intentionally misleading, could be accidentally misleading, but nevertheless, it's not accurate. And do you have any thoughts as to how a person should or could test what they hear and see as something that is accurate or not?
Discernment is a skill that, as you say, is very important in this time. And I will say to you that there have been very powerful intentional efforts put in place to discourage the development of discernment. Discernment, in a sense, requires some of the skills that I spoke of earlier. You need to, in a sense, stand in your own power to practice discernment. Because so much of humanity wants to hear what they want to hear. They want to hear good news. They want to hear encouraging news. They want to hear words that support their view. And so something which sounds supportive of their views, they are likely to believe. And this is very commonly used as a mechanism to promote untruths, to bring forth partial truths which resonate with an individual, and then feed the rest of the untruths in amongst those resonating truths. This is a technique which is not only used by the dark, but is used widely in the dissemination of so-called news and other information in your world. And so it is extremely important that humanity practice discernment, to stand back from everything which is written and said, and to examine it from the perspective of discerning, of measuring truth. You see, the human being has been given powerful tools for discerning truth. You can detect this within the body. You can feel truth within the body if you practice this. You can feel it in the solar plexus, and you might say this is what one might call gut feel. Though again, gut feel is not necessarily accurate unless it has been practiced and refined. And you might say trust built. But also, discernment can be in the heart, in the heart center. Because the heart center is a powerful field that is implicitly based in truth. It is a powerful expression of the essence of the individual. And so that heart center is a powerful way also of detecting that which is not true. These senses can be then augmented by building, you might say, a collection of information, a collection of facts, you might say, which you understand to be true. And you can use these, you can search out things in documents or things which are said which fit with what you know to be true. And if you find something there which you know is not consistent with that truth, then you are far less likely to trust the rest of the content. And so there are some practical things that you can do in this manner which can augment the individual's sense of truth. But this does require, as I said, a great deal of trust of oneself, a great deal of, you might say, healing work done on the individual self in this lifetime, so that there is that willingness to stand in your own truth, come what may, because sometimes it is difficult to stand in that truth. And sometimes it is simply a matter of keeping your own counsel, you might say. It is not about convincing anybody else of your truth. Sometimes that might lead you into a threatening situation, but rather you understanding what is true for you and acting accordingly. This is an extremely important process to practice and to refine. And very few of humanity, even those walking a spiritual path, have truly begun to practice this skill.
I would agree with you, Mr. Gandhi, and I think some of it, too, is the amount of time that it takes that one must invest in the question at hand. And sometimes people don't want to take the time because they're in too much of a hurry. But I thank you for reminding our listeners of what is important. We have a telephone call. Douglas is from Los Angeles, is on line 2. Hi, Douglas.
Hi, Carolyn. Hi, Richard.
What can we do for you, dear?
Yes, I had a question for Mr. Gandhi, and it's he among others, many others, out of India and that region, the Himalayas and Tibet, that area of the world, has produced many very high-level spiritual masters and leaders such as himself over the centuries. And I wanted to ask him about one in particular, Babaji, the great master who worked with Yeshua and many others, and wondering if perhaps he had any interaction with him during his lifetime or subsequent to that, now that he's crossed over.
That's a beautiful question, Douglas. Richard, did Mr. Gandhi hear Douglas's question, or do we need to repeat it?
No, I think we haven't. I was aware of Babaji when I was alive. However, we did not interact. And even though you might consider I was walking, in a sense, a spiritual path, I did not consider myself anywhere near in the league of the great spiritual yogi masters, of which I perhaps consider Babaji as being the greatest. And so I was aware of him, but we did not interact. And I will say that I have indeed been in contact with him since I have crossed over, and some say that he has left the planet. Indeed, that is not the case. And he has been present upon the planet for over some 2,500 years, and his physical age shows him as being about, say, 30 years of age, and he continues to be in this extraordinary physical condition. So he truly is a great, great master. And I have a great deal of respect, and I am aware of the work that he does today to assist with this preparation of humanity and the planet for these ascension events.
Richard Douglas did ask a little bit about the Himalayas, and I think what he was looking at after is there something about the location, the energy, that particular part of the world that seems to bring forth such great yogis and masters? Can Mr. Gandhi touch on that, please?
It is not the location so much, though that mountainous area certainly fosters the opportunity to be, you might say, away from the normal city life, the life of India in general. It is rather more that great souls choose to come forth with the decision to participate in those yogic journeys, not just in the Himalayas, but indeed within India in general. There are many great masters that have been born in many areas of India. And so it is important to recognize that individuals that show great mastery in a current lifetime have worked towards that over many lifetimes. That has been the nature of the journey in this current consciousness. And so it is really that those individuals have chosen to incarnate into a family situation, into a location where it will be a straightforward process for them to connect with whoever it is that they have chosen to work with as a master in this lifetime, to reawaken their skills and to then move forward with their own mastery.
Thank you, Mr. Gandhi. And Douglas, thank you for your question. We appreciate it.
Oh,
it was a great question.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And getting back to you, Mr. Gandhi, I'm assuming that before you came into that lifetime as the one that we would know as Gandhi, that you prepared for it to take on the mission that you did take on. Is that accurate? Is that correct?
I came to understand when I had crossed over that indeed I had prepared for that lifetime. It was not something that I actually understood during my life. Yes, I was aware that we all have had past lives, and that I understood, but my focus was primarily on the living of that life and being an example to others, even to the end of my days. And so I had not really connected or indeed understood my past life journeys until I crossed over. And I can, having done so, report that indeed, I did prepare for that lifetime.
Thank you. We have another caller, Grant from Ontario, Canada, on line one. Hi, Grant.
Oh, hi, Carolyn and Richard. I just have a question for Mr. Gandhi.
Yes.
I hope it's appropriate at this time. Before ascension, let's say that there are families where, let's say, the one parent is qualifies to ascend and the other one doesn't, or, for example, maybe both parents qualify for ascension and the children don't. What happens in those circumstances? Are there any guidelines or rules to be observed?
The word qualify, you mean choose? And
well,
then work
yes,
on it?
Yes, choose. Thank you. Yes, all right.
Uh-huh. Okay. Right. Let's see what Mr. Gandhi has to say about that, Richard.
All right. Thank you.
In the case of children, if those children are under the age of 21, then the parent can choose on their behalf. And if one of the parents chooses to participate in ascension and they choose for the children, then the children will participate in the ascension process, even if the other parent does not choose the ascension path. Once the children are beyond the age of 21, they are considered to be adults from a spiritual perspective and need to choose their own path. Of course, teenage children will almost inevitably exercise some degree of view, if you will, in regard to their path forward. However, the right exists for the parent to choose on behalf of that child up until the age of 21.
Oh, wonderful.
Thank you for your question, Grant.
And thank you.
Mr. Gandhi, I would like to offer my great gratitude to you for coming and giving us this remarkable information, and for you, Richard, to be taking this information. We have 5 more minutes, Richard, and I would like for you to talk to people about joining our list so that they can get our emails about coming events and what might be new on the drawing board.
Well, the simple way to connect with us in terms of what's unfolding is to go to the 2012countdown.com website and enter your name and email address on the top or bottom of any page on that site, and then click on the opt-in link in the email which comes to you as a result of having done that. And so you will receive notices of all that we might be getting up to, including these calls. And what's new on the horizon? Well, that's interesting. We spoke a little last week about the new ebook that we've been working on called The Truth About 2012. What's interesting that's on the drawing board is a newsletter which has begun to emerge as a result of the most recent call we had with Yeshua, where there were lots of questions that were coming forth anyway, and we kind of encouraged a few more. And what came out of that was a flood of questions of really interesting nature. And so Carolyn has been working on preparing some newsletters as a result of that, which has the name Yeshua Then and Now. And some of the questions and answers, the questions have been fascinating, but the answers have been even more fascinating. And so I expect that we'll be launching that in the next week or so when we're a bit more prepared. But some of the information I think you will find quite extraordinary.
Yes, I felt that way when I was doing the research. And the questions, as you say, have been very fascinating. And Yeshua's answers are bringing in threads that you're not seeing anywhere else. And then when I go and do the research, because I like to find in different places confirmation and even more explanation of the answers that he has given. And so I do like to put together what I consider science with, I guess there's not another way of saying this. People call it channeling, but I feel like it's a little bit different than that, in the sense that we actually communicate, you might say, face-to-face with those on the other side. To me, it is just something so natural that all of us can do if we work with it. And I'd like to put together that confirmation that is found either in archaeology, in religious texts, in historical texts, and put it together with the people's questions and the answers that Yeshua has given. And I just find that whole process not only exciting, but extremely enlightening.
It's been amazing to read that material and to see, as I said, the questions and the answers that are coming forth. Quite fascinating.
And so I would like to also add this. If people have someone else that they would like for us to bring forth on our Saturday shows, please send that to Richard. And you want to give your email address, Richard, where they should send that?
Yes, send it to richard@the2012countdown.net. Would be a good place to send it.
Okay. And we recommend that you put your name on our mailing list so you get all the latest information. And Richard, again, I would like to thank you in a very special way for bringing forth Mr. Gandhi. And I would like to thank Mr. Gandhi for being here and giving such extraordinary answers to the questions. And I would like to say for now, for myself, goodbye until next week. And Richard?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Gandhi and Carolyn, and good night, everyone.
Good night. Until next week.